Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's fourth quarter 2013 earnings conference call. With us this morning, we have from Alpek, Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to our fourth quarter 2013 earnings conference call. We very much appreciate everyone's participation. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, CFO, will provide some insights about the industry and our company's results and outlook. And after that, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainty. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Jose Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I will start today's call with a brief overview of market conditions, followed by our company's performance and investments. Afterwards, Eduardo Escalante will discuss Alpek's year-end financial results and 2014 guidance. Let me begin by talking about the macro environment. As noted in our press release, the fourth quarter was particularly challenging for our polyester segment. As we have discussed throughout the year, the Asian polyester market has been struggling with low margins following a significant increase in capacity. We began 2013 on a more positive note, but margins shifted unexpectedly during September due to pressure on Asian producers from declining feedstock prices combined with the region's overcapacity. This trend continued throughout the fourth quarter, causing Asian polyester margins to reach levels almost as low as the bottom observed in late 2012. Keep in mind that Asian margins serve as a reference for global polyester markets outside of North America, such as Europe or South America. Roughly one-third of our polyester sales have a greater degree of exposure to Asian market dynamics and have been subject to lower margins since, September 2013. Caprolactam is the other product in our portfolio that has been impacted in 2012 and 2013. We operate one of the lowest cost caprolactam facilities in the world with an installed capacity of 85,000 tons per year, representing less than 2% of Alpek's installed capacity. Even though our volume exposure is small, margins have been extremely volatile over the past couple of years. The global caprolactam industry is going through a deep down cycle with margins at near historically low levels as a result, again, of new capacity in China. Although 2013 was certainly a challenging year, we remain bullish on our growth opportunities. We are committed to realizing our business full potential through a proactive and disciplined investment approach following three strategic guidelines. One, benefit from the North American natural gas advantage. Two, maximize operating efficiency. And three, leverage Alpek's Integrex technology. CapEx increased 55% in 2013 as we moved ahead with the implementation of our growth strategy, and we plan building upon that momentum this year. We have an even larger investment program planned for 2014 with CapEx growing almost 7% to $300 million. Let me now review our capital investment priorities for 2014. First, our Cosoleacaque cogeneration plant is on track to begin operations during the second quarter. As a reminder, this is a 95-megawatt facility with annual estimated savings of $40 to $50 million per year. We are encouraged by market response to our power offering. 100% of the plant's electricity has been either contracted or committed with other industrial users for more than 10 years. Another important piece of information is that the cogeneration projects that we have become more attractive as a result of the change in the fiscal laws, which will now allow the cogeneration projects to have immediate depreciation. This means that right after startup, we will be able to deduct 100% of the investment, as compared to the accelerated depreciation we had before that allowed us to deduct only 74 to 75% of the investment. So when we consider the impact for Cosoleacaque, Altamira, and later in Salamanca, this is a very important improvement in the value, again, of our cogeneration projects. Furthermore, work is advancing as planned for our second cogeneration plant in Altamira. Technical specification phase is almost complete, and shortly we plan to initiate the contractor bidding process. This facility will have a capacity of approximately 250 to 60 megawatts with annual estimated savings almost doubling those of the Cosoleacaque plant. This project is expected to come online at the end of 2016. Second, the agreement signed with M&G for the construction of the integrated PTA-PET site in Corpus are in full effect. Payments have been made in accordance with the agreed-upon milestones. We made payments of $41 million during 2013 out of the $350 million total planned investment. The site is expected to begin operations in 2016. Third, we approved a new investment project to build a propylene storage sphere, which will allow us to increase supply for our polypropylene facility and improve its utilization. Propylene is a petrochemical feedstock to produce polypropylene, and its domestic supply in Mexico is limited. The additional storage capacity will enable Alpek to maximize domestic propylene supply and complement our import capabilities. This $25 million project is expected to be completed in 2015 and should provide approximately $8 million of incremental EBITDA per year. Fourth, we applied our Integrex technology as a vehicle for international expansion and signed a JV agreement with United Petrochemical Company, a wholly owned subsidiary of Sistema, for the construction of an Integrex PTA-PET plant in Russia. The feasibility study is progressing as planned and is expected to be presented for board approval by year end. Our technology license agreement with Netherlands based DSM, Fiber Intermediates, is also moving along. By reducing feedstock consumption and maximizing the efficiency of certain production processes, we expect to improve our caprolactam's cost competitiveness even further. Annual cash savings of approximately $9 million are expected to begin in the later part of this year. And lastly, our backward integration into MEG or glycol is a top priority for us. We are encouraged by recent developments with potential partners both in Mexico and in the United States and expect to be providing an update as soon as new information becomes available. Let me, however, share with you that we have confirmed, we have done some preliminary engineering, or we can confirm that the cracker in Morelos, or the capability of the bottleneck in the cracker in Morelos, is enough for the glycol to supply the glycol project. We are very close to reaching a decision on selection of technology for the EO and MEG plant. We are also looking or finalizing site selection for the plant. And last but not least, we have also our discussion about supply of ethane from Pemex are encouraging. the ethane is that we need for the project is already being produced and is is right now mixed with the gas, natural gas stream that Pemex is using, and the only thing pending to confirm availability of ethane for the project is to make sure that Pemex existing separation of fractionation plants can be optimized and increase its utilization to give us 100% of our supply. We believe Pemex is doing some engineering and some studies, and we believe they're going to be ready to confirm this then in May or June this year. But so far, things look very promising. In conclusion, we are investing heavily in the infrastructure necessary to enhance our current business, maximize operating efficiencies, and provide a solid platform for future growth. It will take some time for our industry to recover, especially given the latest developments, but I have confidence in our team and the capital allocation decisions we are making. Before turning the call to Eduardo, I would like to make a brief comment on the recently approved energy reform. This is, in our opinion, the most transformational development for Mexico since the North American Free Trade Agreement 20 years ago. We are very excited by the prospects of hydrocarbon exploration and production being open to private investment in our country. APEC is in a unique position to benefit from greater availability of natural gas liquids such as ethane and propane. Even though our company is not directly involved in oil and gas exploration and production, there is upside to APEC's vertical integration strategy, which includes gas-based power cogeneration, ethane-based production of MEG, and propane dehydrogenation to produce propylene. While we are optimistic about the benefit of the energy reform, keep in mind that we are still in the middle of a fundamental process which involves establishing secondary laws. And once the secondary laws are approved, any material benefits from energy-related investments in Mexico are still a few years out in the horizon. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. I will now focus on the key highlights of the quarter and then move on to our guidance. Consolidated EBITDA for the quarter was $132 million, down 17% and 6% when compared to third quarter 2013 and fourth quarter 2012, respectively, and slightly below a revised estimate of $135 million for the period. Plastics and chemicals EBITDA growth was more than offset by the fall in polyester. Fourth quarter 2013 polyester EBITDA fell 25% quarter-on-quarter and 22% year-on-year due to lower volume and margins. Polyester volume was down 11% compared with the third quarter as a result of year-end seasonality and declining feedstock prices. Margins also reflected the increased pressure on polyester export markets as referenced PTA and PET margins in Asia fell back to the low fourth quarter 2012 levels. In contrast, fourth quarter 2013 plastics and chemicals EBITDA grew 6% quarter-on-quarter and 43% year-over-year as a result of higher margins and volume. EPS and polypropylene margin growth benefited plastics and chemicals EBITDA, offsetting low caprolactam margins. Consolidated EBITDA for 2013 was $572 million, down 21% compared with 2012. In addition to the market dynamics we just discussed, full-year EBITDA was also impacted by the closure of the K-Steer site. Moving on to net income, we reported a $9 million majority net loss during the fourth quarter, down 123% or $50 million when compared to third quarter 2013. Besides the lower EBITDA, the bottom line was impacted by a $17 million increase in operating expenses as a result of asset impairment charges mainly associated with the Cape Fear closure. We also had an $18 million increase in income taxes related to initial effect from the change in the fair income tax rate as part of the recently approved fiscal reform in Mexico. Majority net income for 2013 decreased 92% to $21 million, resulting from the lower EBITDA and the $117 million net charge related to the Cape Fear site shutdown. Excluding the Cape Fear charges, majority net income for the year totaled $138 million. In terms of CAPEX, we invested $23 million in the fourth quarter, for a total of $179 million in 2013. Approximately 75% of these funds were used for strategic projects, which include the Cosoleacaque Cogeneration Plant and the Greenfield PTA PET site in Corpus Christi. Net debt was $766 million at year-end 2013, up 24% or $150 million from 2012 as a result of the $148 million in advance 2014 dividend payments made during the fourth quarter. Gross debt was flat year over year, and our company's leverage and interest coverage ratios stand at 1.3 and 7.1 times, respectively. Before moving on to Q&A, I would like to wrap up this section of the call with a brief comment on Alpek's 2014 guidance. Looking ahead into 2014, we are cautious by the market dynamics observed in the second half of last year. Our base case is for a low margin environment throughout 2014. Savings of approximately $50 million from the Cosoleacaque Cogeneration Facility and the Cape Fear shutdown are expected to offset lower polyester, EPS, and polypropylene margins. As a result, 2014 consolidated EBITDA is expected to be flat compared to 2013. We are fully committed to moving forward with several major projects, as you heard from Pepe. Total CAPEX for 2014 is estimated at $300 million. Some of the larger investments are Corpus Christi, the completion of the Cosoleacaque Cogeneration Facility, and the polypropylene storage sphere. Even with a 70% CAPEX increase, 2014 is anticipated to be free cash flow positive, as working capital requirements remain low, financing expenses decrease, taxes remain stable, and 2014 dividends were prepaid in fourth quarter 2013. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to take a question. And we'll go ahead and take our first question from Santiago Perez Piper with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Pepe, Hernan, and Eduardo, and thanks a lot for your time and taking my questions. I just have a couple of questions. The first one, in terms of the MEG plan, on a best case scenario, when could it be operational and how much EBITDA could it add to Alpek results? And then the second one is, Pepe, you mentioned that one of your goals is to take advantage of cheap natural gas in North America. Apart from this project, the MEG project, can you please elaborate on what other opportunities have you identified? Thank you.
Okay, well, first, the
The MNG project, we estimate, is going to be operational end of 16, and the incremental EBITDA from that operation, we estimate somewhere between $80 and $90 million per year for Alpek. Now, to your second question, Santiago, the advantage, we think we want to take advantage of natural gas and natural gas liquids. In terms of the natural gas projects, the most important projects, obviously, are the three cogeneration projects I just mentioned, Altamira, Cosolacaque, and Salamanca. In terms of the natural gas liquids, of course, is the ethane, which is the basic feedstock for the glycol plant, and also propane, which would be basic feedstock for a propane dehydro plant. Remember that we have our polypropylene plant in Altamira that is operating below capacity due to lack of feedstock. We have now capacity for at least additional 200,000 tons of polypropylene per year, but there is not enough supply of propylene here in Mexico. So those would be, I would say, the major projects that would benefit from natural gas and natural gas liquids availability.
Perfect. This is very helpful. And just one last question. If the energy reform was to come as we've seen as of now, as expected, is there any other chain or any other part of the energy industry where Alpek could participate apart from your current chain?
Could you repeat again your question, Santiago?
Yes, of course. If the energy reform was to come as expected with the opening of the sectors that we saw on the last draft,
yes.
Is there any chain or any part of the energy industry where Alpek could participate without including your current current chain?
To answer your question, the energy part is mostly today in Alpha. So for Alpha, on top of the availability of natural gas liquids, the energy reform, of course, will open a lot of opportunities for Alpha. The energy, 3 years ago, the energy business was in Alpek, but before the IPO, it was moved to Alpha. So Alpha would certainly be able to participate in a lot of new industries. For us in Alpek at this stage, we do not envision moving into new projects as a result of the energy reform. But, we will be reviewing this as we have more information.
Thanks so much, Pepe.
Bye-bye.
Santiago, this is Hernan. Just for clarification purposes about your first question, were you referring to the MNG project in Corpus Christi, or were you referring to the glycol project in Mexico?
No, to the glycol project, to the MNG plant. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear.
Okay, because the answer was regarding our MNG plant in Corpus Christi. Just to
okay, well, I understood MNG. Yes, the glycol plant. If that was your question, that would be more starting in 2017. And the EBITDA will be in the range of $300 million.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Hernan, for the clarification, and thanks, Pepe.
Okay. You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Ivan Enriquez with HSBC.
Hola, Pepe, Eduardo, and Hernan. Thank you for your call. Overcapacity in China for PTA and for caprolactam, it's nothing new, neither the challenging outlook that you have for the following years. Many companies have announced sizable capacity addition in both markets for the following years. So my first question would be, if you please can remind us how much export sales contribute to Alpek consolidated sales, and from that amount, how much are PTA and PET exports, and how much are caprolactam exports and destinations, please.
Yes. I'll answer, and then I'll ask Eduardo if I forget something to add his comments. But basically, in polyester, roughly one-third of our capacity is not going to Asia, but is exported, and in some way is impacted by the Asian margins. Our exports are mostly going to South America and to Europe. But prices in South America and in Europe are, again, follow in a certain way the Asian prices. Okay? So in polyester, one-third of our sales. In the case of caprolactam, like 80% of our sales are going to China. Okay? So in caprolactam, we're very exposed to this margin change. In polyester, again, like one-third of our sales are going there.
So in from APEC, close to 20% are related to export markets. That would be a fair assumption?
From total
sales.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say that seems right.
Okay. And my second question, Pepe, would be, I mean, probably Eduardo wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that in the case of caprolactam, even though the percentage of exports is quite high, the volume is only around 65 to 70,000 tons per year, which is only about 5% of the Alpec volume. So it's quite high. However, in terms of percentage, the volume is not that big.
Okay, thank you, guys. And just my second quick question would be, talking about caprolactam, you just mentioned you have this capacity, 85,000 tons per year. But projects in those regions, in the Southeast Asia region, projects are planning to add close to 2 million per year in 2014 and 15. So it's a huge capacity addition when you compare to your 85,000 tons per year. But you considering any strategic alternative for this business? I mean, the outlook seems very, very tough from my perspective. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Why don't you answer the question, Roberto?
Sure. In the case of caprolactam, it is true the increased capacity in China and in Asia in general is very significant. However, what we are doing is we are focusing to taking advantage of some other opportunities, in particular in South America. There is no caprolactam production in South America. We have been exporting to those markets for a long time, and we do have some opportunities to increase or export volumes to those countries. In addition to that, we also see in the midterm a big opportunity in Mexico for caprolactam, as the automotive industry is increasing significantly in Mexico. New auto plants, as you know, are being built mainly in central Mexico, in the Bajío region. Several brands of cars are building new plants or expanding existing ones, just like Nissan just did in Aguascalientes. These increased car manufacturing facilities also create a large demand for engineering plastics parts that use caprolactam in their manufacturing. So we are also looking into taking advantage of these opportunities in order to reduce our exposure to Asia.
Okay, so which was the caprolactam amount that you had generated from caprolactam this year? I mean, close to zero. Did you generate any EBITDA from caprolactam?
Yeah.
Yes, caprolactam last year was basically break even.
Okay, last year is 2013, right? Okay, perfect.
2013.
Thank
yes.
you, guys.
You're welcome.
We'll take our next question from Philippe Santos with J.P. Morgan.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just have some quick questions. The first one, it's on the glycol project. What are the next steps any for the final decision and final goal for the project? And the second question is related to the bottom line losses on the back of this higher deferred taxes. If you could explain a little bit on if the adjustment was only in this quarter and you expect to have something more over the next quarters. Thanks so much.
Well, in terms of the first question, the glycol project, the key factor now for us is the confirmation from Pemex of the ethane availability, which, as I explained, looks good. The ethane that we need for the project is already in the gas stream, but it's not being separated. So the only thing we're waiting is for Pemex to finalize some engineering studies they're doing to upgrade their facilities, the separation facilities, and to confirm that this ethane will be indeed available. The date for that would be May this year. The other very important issue is to do some, let's say, basic engineering of the project, do a little bit of engineering, just to confirm the amount of the investment, to have a more precise range of the amount of the investment. And we're also working on that. So I would expect that, assuming that both of these responses are positive, we could, let's say, formally start the project in the second half of this year. Okay? With respect to the tax increases, I would probably ask you, Eduardo, to explain, because this is a one-time effect, and in fact, the change of or the fiscal reform in Mexico, it does create this one-time loss, but with the advantage of the immediate 100% depreciation of the cogeneration project, actually our outlook of tax payments in the future improves versus the original situation. But again, why don't you explain, Eduardo, what happened with this, how this charge of taxes in the fourth quarter was calculated?
Sure. The deferred income tax rate was increased, as Pepe mentioned, from 28% to 30%. So we have a one-time charge to level up to this new rate. The impact on the net majority net income was $19 million in the fourth quarter of last year.
That's perfect. Thanks so much.
And we'll take our next question from Juan Carlos Mateos with HSBC.
Yes, thank you. Pepe, Eduardo, Hernandez, very quick question. It's in a qualitative type. In the first half of 2015, practically all thought that the PTA margins had bottomed and that the Asian market dynamics had more or less normalized. But as Pepe pointed out that his initial remarks in September, there was a negative surprise. I know that you do not have a crystal ball, Pepe, but would you say that this time around perhaps we've seen the worst, the worst is behind that perhaps, you know, with this conservative guidance that you're giving, we could say that basically we have reached the bottom and that perhaps going forward things should be more normal than what we saw in 2015? I know it's a tough question to answer, but just to get your overall feeling
for how things are.
I think. Yeah. Well, I will share with you what we see. You know, over let's say medium term or long term equilibrium margin for PET and PTA in Asia, we believe it's going to be somewhere between $250 per ton to $300 per ton. Okay, we believe that's the range where the margins should be under normal circumstances, and these are low margins, but we believe there's going to be low margins due to the excess capacity. What we are experiencing today, in February, the margins are around $200, but in the fourth quarter last year, 2013, the margins went all the way down to $180. After being in the summer of 2013, in 260, even 270, I think we reached a high of 270. So 2013, we started the year, well, let me go back. In fourth quarter 2012, the PET margin was around $173. Then we started the year, January, February, at around $220. And then, let's say from there on, March, the period of March, August, I would say the average margin must have been around $250, $260, and it reached a maximum of $270. And then in September, it started to come down. My initial reaction was that it came down in September because people were anticipating prices of raw materials to go down, and they were trying to get rid of inventory. They were managing their inventory. When customers see the prices coming down, they try to sell their product as soon as they can, and they stop buying. So that created, I think, for a while, a sort of a significant reduction in margin below, again, the 200. Because, as I say, in September, I think, it was 200, and it went down to 180 in the fourth quarter. In January, February, we saw it come back a little bit to 200. Remember, there is some seasonality also in this market. So we perhaps see some additional, we hope we'll see some additional improvement, in the summertime. A little bit more pressure at the end of the year. But we believe we're going to be gradually moving towards this 250, 300 range. The big question, even for us, is how long is it going to take us to be there? Some people tell us it's going to be 2 years, but again, it can change very, 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 very drastically. Last year, the margins went from 170 or 180 to 240, 50 in 3 or 4 months. For the time being, in our estimate for this year, we are assuming that the margins are going to remain around the $200, $220 for this year in average in 2014. But as I say, I could expect that, I would expect that the margins are going to start moving towards the 250 range. And part of the reason that I say that is that with these margins, with the margins that we have today, a lot of PTA producers are selling below the variable cost, not only below the cash cost, but below the variable cost. Just to share with you some additional information, the Asian PTA producers last year had a combined loss of close to $2 billion. So the loss of PTA producers in Asia was $2 billion last year. And again, in some cases, they're even losing money at the variable cost. That means they are not being able to even pay for the freight, the acetic acid, or the raw materials and the energy that they're consuming. So at some point in time, they will realize they're better off not selling those additional pounds or those additional tons. And that's why you still believe that also people say it's going to be two years to go back to a more normalized situation. I believe this could happen earlier, particularly for PTA. In PTA, we saw at the end of last year margins of $50, $60, even $40 over paraxylene. Again, this is, I think variable costs are like $70 or $80 per ton. So again, I don't think this should last too long at this very low level. So if let's say margins of PTA go back to $100 per ton, $120, then a total margin of PET could go back to the $250 range, more or less. But as I said, we are assuming that the margins are going to stay relatively depressed for the remainder of 2014.
Well, I think it's a very thorough response. Thank you so much. That's very clear. So I guess that the magic figure to look for is the, you know, anything above 220, getting closer to 215, the PET margins, and hopefully, and it's very clear that the guidance you gave already incorporate the tough environment. So, yes, better to be safe than sorry. Thank you so much for the very thorough answer.
You're welcome.
We'll take our next question from Lillian Stark with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. My question was also regarding Asian margins, but the answer that was just provided was very complete, so thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll go next to Gustavo Gattas with BTG.
Hi, guys. I had just a follow-up here on Juan's question. If I could take just two quick angles. The first one, would it be possible to talk a little bit about how you guys were thinking about the CPL margins, the caprolactam margins on the guidance, if this is also, I don't know, a continuation of flat, or are you considering potentially even negative EBITDA for the year? And if I could just touch on the side of just the PET margins themselves, I just wanted to ask two questions specifically. One, is there any reason why you would think that equilibrium conditions should change in Asia for producers to be running for such a long period of time like this, or is it really a discrepancy? That's one side. And the second one is, have you seen any pressure for changes in contract terms or effectively conditions for negotiating PET or PX in North America?
Okay. Let me answer your second question, and then I will ask Eduardo to help me with your caprolactam question. Remember, Eduardo used to manage the caprolactam business up until 6 months ago, so I think he can probably give us a better answer. In terms of PTA, again, what I was saying, or the PTA PET margin, what I was saying is that I do understand that when you have overcapacity, the industry can be operating with margins similar to conversion costs for some long time, okay? But meaning that you are cash neutral. But what I was trying to convey before is that over the last 4 or 5 months, the industry has been operating, particularly PTA, has been operating below variable cost. And that is what we believe cannot last for too long. It cannot last for too long, because, you know, you will be better off not selling than producing those additional tons. People sometimes continue to sell the product because they believe this is a temporary situation. They don't want to lose market share. They don't want to lose a position in the market. And they say, look, well, I might have to sacrifice 1, 2, 3 months. But if this is becoming a permanent situation, I think people will change and restructure their businesses. We do even understand that the Chinese government as a whole is very concerned about this situation, because it's not only the PTA industry or the petrochemical industry. This is happening, I believe, in the cement industry, steel industry, and a lot of losses are being made. So I don't know to what extent this is going to catalyze some sort of rationalization or in polyester again. Remember that in China, a lot of the producers, a lot of the players have a lot of different lines.
and that gives them the flexibility of shutting down part of the capacity. If you are a producer of whatever product, you know, PTA or PT, and you have only one line, well, then it's sometimes more difficult to shut, you know, to shut down your line or to stop or to reduce your production, because, you know, once you have the line operating, if you're going to produce 70 or 80%, perhaps, you know, the variable cost is not so different. But if you have the flexibility of shutting down one line completely, well, of course, then the possibility of you doing that is higher. So, again, that's what we say, that we believe that the margin, in particular for PTA, I am convinced that the margins have reached a bottom and that they are going to come back sooner than in 2 years. Let me put it this way. The PTA margins will not last. Existing margins today are like $70 per ton. I don't think they will last in $70 for 2 years. I think they're going to move back to like 100 relatively, you know, sooner than that. And that's my vision. And in terms of your question about PET and all of these pressure, all of these conditions in Asia putting pressure in the North American market, again, if PET margins in Asia are at the level of 250 to 250 to 300, the North American situation is stable. It's okay. If PET margins in Asia remain at 200 for a long time, yeah, that might put some pressure in North America. Remember, today there is no PTA imports in North America, and there is no, I mean, and PET imports in North America are approximately, let's say, less than 10%. Okay, so far, this situation in Asia has impacted North America in a marginal way. And again, if we go back to this $250, $250-$300, we believe the situation in North America should be stable. Now, Eduardo, if you could, give us your opinion on caprolactam.
In the case of caprolactam, we expect the margins to be flat in 2014 versus 2013. However, we do expect a slight increase in the EBITDA of our caprolactam business for this year. And the reason is we are starting by mid this year a new project that we are doing with DSM to improve the efficiency at our plant. This is a technology license project, as I mentioned with DSM. This project has a benefit of around $9 million per year. So given the ramp up of this year, we expect to capture part of that. We already have one of the most competitive plants in the world in terms of cost, and with this improvement, it is going to be even in a better position.
Perfect. Steph, if I could just come back, one follow-up on what you said. The underlying assumption that you guys have on your own forecast is for margins around 200 to 220.
Yes.
Does it also include weaker margins in North America, then, since you're saying that would not necessarily be stable? I'm just trying to understand what's feeding into the 570 conservative.
We are including a slightly lower margins in PET in North America in our assumption.
Okay, perfect.
Not in PTA, but in PET, yes.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
We'll take our next question from Jose Vasquez with GBM.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for the call. It's actually Mauricio Santos. The thing is that, well, you already explained us, you gave us your guidance and your view on the margins. However, I would like to know, how can we bridge that to the sales? for instance, let's say you're, let's say this quarter and the last quarter, you were roughly selling each ton for $1,700. And well, actually, yes, your margin is actually $120. I get that the margin is lower as a result of caprolactam. However, can you explain why the average sales price, you're not seeing the reduction in the average sales price, however, you're seeing the reduction in the margin. So I don't know, could you elaborate on that?
Eduardo, do you have, an answer to that? I mean, we have an issue, Mauricio, that might be explaining some of what you're saying. Last quarter, fourth quarter 13, we did have an inventory devaluation.
Okay.
I think I mentioned before that, you know, prices of raw materials came down.
Okay.
So we had a negative impact as a result of this inventory devaluation, which was around somewhere between $7 and $8 million. And so I think that might explain, you know, part of the reason of the reduction in margin in polyester. The other part, of course, was volume. You know, when you have a lower volume, then also sometimes, if you're talking of cash margin, you know, your fixed costs tend to increase with lower volume, right?
What is behind this inventory devaluation?
Well, the reduction of prices, of raw materials, most important paraxylene. The paraxylene prices went down. And when these prices go down, you have inventories, and then the value of your inventories at the end of the of the month or the quarter go down, and we have to reflect that in our financial statements.
And do you expect are we prone to see this going forward, or it was just one time a one off? Or
well, it was one off. I believe we're going to see also some inventory devaluation in the first quarter. I think we'll see some of that also in the first quarter, yes. And in fact, not as an excuse, but if we had not had this inventory devaluation in fourth quarter, our results would have exceeded the guidance for the fourth quarter.
Okay. Another question. You made the impairment of the Cape Fear plant, and as a result of that, your depreciation nearly doubled for the whole year. Are we going to see this? The depreciation increase from 2 billion to nearly 4.4 billion in the whole year. The depreciation level would stay at the 4.4 billion, or shall we see it trend down in 2014?
No, in 2014 it should go back to the original level.
You're purely writing off the Cape Fear this year.
That's right. That was the one. The idea was to do that everything last year. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Precisely to avoid, impacting the results all the time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Just as a reminder, that is star one for questions. And we'll go next to Rafael Escobar with Vector Financial Services.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Hi, everyone. I have two questions. I want to ask you, if I may, what are the main reasons or the reasons behind to postpone the co-origination plan in Cosolacaque? Because in last conference, Alpex said that in the first quarter from this year, we'll begin the operations instead of the second quarter you already said. My second question is regarding about your plant in Suape, Brazil. Which is the actual capacity and the market of that plant? And what are you going to do with the plant of Cape Fear? Are you going to sell, or will be the future of this plant? Thank you.
The cogeneration project, I believe the original date to start the project was March next year, to start at least test, and I think the date today is April. And most of the change, I think, has to do with permitting and from CFE to connect to connect all the lines with them, and also a little bit of delay in the supply of natural gas to the plant. So it was mostly that, but it's really, we're talking perhaps of a 1 month delay. Okay, so it's relatively, a slight delay. And then you were asking about SWAPE, but yeah. I didn't understand what is the question about SWAPE?
The question is, what is the actual capacity and the operations of that plant?
But that plant is owned by Petrobras, okay? That plant is not ours.
Oh, I see. Okay. And lastly, what are you going to do with the plant from
Cape Fear? Well, part of the equipment, we are looking at using part of the equipment, but for the most part, we are not going to utilize that plant anymore. I mean, we are going to sell most of the equipment. Some of the equipment we're going to use, but very few of that part. So
do you have any estimation about the cost or the earnings that you will have in the future?
No. All of this was included in the write-off of the project in the asset impairment. We consider some income, some revenue from sale of the equipment to third parties. Let me put it this way: we don't see any upside to the Cape Fear shutdown in terms of being able to we don't see any significant upside of using those equipments or selling those equipments.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another reminder, that is star 1 if you do have any questions, and we'll pause just for a moment. And we do have a question from John C. with Manulife Assessment Management.
Hi, just a quick question on the dividend that you paid in the fourth quarter. Is that expected to be the full year 2014 dividend?
The answer is yes. We paid, we prepaid, so to speak, the dividends that we were estimating for the full year. Depending on cash flow generation and use of funds, this might change in the future, but we are not assuming that we will pay any additional dividends in 2014.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And we'll go next to Mark Tyler with TSW.
Hi, good morning. Just a brief strategic question. You have such good cost plus contracts for a large part of your volume. Is there any point in the future that you could see maybe not having exposure to spot prices, especially on the PTA side, and sort of eliminating the spot price exposure and just having contract exposure in the future?
I will say we will continue continue. I mean, we're going to have contracts. I mean, a lot of our sales are contracted, but in many of these contracts, or in some of these contracts, the prices follow market prices or spot prices. Okay, so most of our exports, as I mentioned, that are going to mostly South America and Europe, they do have a component of volatility, and that volatility is almost always based on the Asian reference. So as the North American market gradually grows, yes, there's going to be a reduction in that. In the percentage of our volume that is going to be subject to these Asian prices, but again, I mean that will take time.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go next to Chelsea Consco with TIAA Crep.
Hi, thank you for the call. I just had a question clarifying the glycol project. I know at one time you were considering a greenfield project in the U.S.
Yes.
Versus this project with Pemex. You officially, decided on working with Pemex and eliminated the possibility of the greenfield altogether?
Well, let me say that we have been running the analysis in parallel. We've been looking at both options, and we have determined that the Pemex project is a better option for us for several reasons. One of those reasons is in Pemex we can do the bottlenecking, which means lower investment cost. We believe that opportunity cost of ethane in Mexico is also lower than in the U.S. to a certain extent, so that could potentially translate over the life of the project in more attractive prices of ethane in Mexico. So lower investment in the bottleneck of the cracker. I mean, probably I think better prices in Mexico in the future, and also. Time requirements, it would be faster to debottleneck the cracker than to build a new cracker. Building petrochemical plants now in the U.S., particularly on the Gulf Coast, is becoming very expensive, and it takes a lot of time due to all the permitting that you have to do. So we have not shut down the possibility of doing something in the U.S. if for whatever reason we cannot get the ethane from Pemex, but let me put it to you very clearly. Our preferred option is to do it in Mexico.
Okay, and so you expect to make your decision in May or June of this
right.
year?
Right.
Okay, and as of right now, the total CapEx is expected to be around $800 million, was it?
No, because remember the original plan, we were talking of 600,000 tons of glycol, and now we're talking of 750,000. Tons of glycol. Okay, so our capex, and this is one. Remember, I mentioned there are two key issues for us right now. One is to confirm the availability of ethane, and the other one is to determine with more precision the capex for the project. But we do know it's going to be more than 800. Right? It's going to be more than $1 billion. But again, for a higher capacity. And this is one of the issues that we're now determining.
And why did you increase the capacity for the project?
Well, we increased the capacity, number one, because we have the market. And number two, because we have availability of ethane. And because, as I mentioned before, the cracker, originally we thought the cracker would not be able to debottleneck to close to 1 million tons. And now with this engineering analysis, and we realize the cracker can go all the way to 1 million tons. That means that we can go and have 750,000 tons, which, by the way,
I would say, is the optimal scale for a state-of-the-art glycol plant in the world today.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our final question from Christopher Buck with Barclays.
Good morning. You gave us some really good information on PTA and PET spreads in Asia, and I'm just wondering if you could remind us on the levels in North America and if you could be a little more specific about your assumptions around guidance of what that assumes for those spreads in North America this year.
Okay, well, the spreads in North America must be somewhere between $400 and $450 per ton.
Okay, and so you're anticipating just a small decline. What kind of percentage decline this year for guidance?
We're anticipating a small decline, as I mentioned before, on PET prices as a result of this Asian situation. Okay. We're assuming that in Asia is going to be 200, 220, right? And normally or typically in North America, the margins are Asian margins plus, let's say, $220, more or less. Okay?
Okay, perfect. And then just on the dividend again, if you could just elaborate as to why that was pre-funded this year, what was the rationale for doing that?
Eduardo, why don't you explain that? I think you probably... You know, you can explain it better than I can. It's a fiscal issue. Eduardo?
Sure. The fiscal reform in Mexico included some increase in tax rates, in particular personal tax rates, starting in 2014. So in order to compensate or to avoid those issues, we decided to prepay the dividend in the fourth quarter of 2013.
This is an advantage, Eduardo, for the Mexican investors, right? For the Mexican fiscal investors.
Right. So what we did
for individual investors that pay taxes in Mexico, tax rate 2013 was 30%, and it moved to 35% in 2014.
Perfect.
That is correct. So we usually pay dividends in March, so we decided to move forward those dividends to last year, to the end of last year.
Perfect. And last one for me, just wondering if you can update us on your funding plans. It sounds like given that pre-funding, you expect to be free cash flow positive in 2014, but any other thoughts or strategies around funding on the credit side?
No, we have no plans to do any new issuances. We actually, as you mentioned, are going to be free cash flow positive, so we'll cover the expected $300 million for CapEx for this year from using our own funds and the cash flow of the company.
Okay, and then I suppose when we hear a little bit more about the potential for additional CapEx of this $1 billion plus, that you might give us a color on funding for that going forward?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, we will. We will. We're not just ready for that, because also I have to, we will do that at the right time. But as we have mentioned all along, good news is the company generates a lot of funds internally. We have a relatively low interest expense because of all this new refinancing we did last couple of years. And as I mentioned also, with the nuclear generation projects, we should keep a relatively low tax payments because of starting off all these new projects. So, we believe the cash generation of the company will continue to be very strong and will be almost sufficient to fund these projects.
we do not believe we're going to need a lot of additional funding.
Okay, great. It was a very helpful call. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that concludes today's question and answer session. Mr. Lozano, I will turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. So we very much appreciate everyone's participation in today's call, and we look forward to maintaining an open dialogue with all of you. Please feel free to contact us if you have any questions or comments. Thank you very much for joining our call.
And that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.